This is Daim Shabazz of Chess Drum, and we're in St. Louis, Missouri at the first Sankfield Cup, and we are going into the fifth round. It's a very epic matchup that is brewing today between Hikaru Nakamura and Magnus Carlsen. Also, Gaia Kamsky is playing Levon Aronian. I have with me Daniel Lucas, who is the editor of the U.S. Chess Life magazine, and it's one of the most popular magazines in the world. And I'm sitting with him in the World Chess Hall of Fame, and I'm going to ask him a few questions. How are you enjoying the experience so far, Dan?
It is amazing here in St. Louis. They do everything first class, and it can be very cliche to say first class, but in this case, I mean it literally. I can't imagine how they could present an event like this any better than they already are. Between the free food for the spectators, and of course us journalists, and the top-notch playing conditions for the four players, it's led to fighting chess in every single round, and it's, they have multiple settings for analysis. They have it both online, and they have it here locally at the Hall of Fame and in a sports bar called Lester's right around the corner. So wow. The opportunities for chess fans are just amazing. And it both makes my job easier and harder as an editor, because it's easier because there's just so much material to choose from, but it's harder because I can't cover it all. There's just too much, and I have to make some very painful decisions.
Exactly. I mean, you have some writers here who are going to be helping you to cover the event. Now, can you tell us a little bit about U.S. Chess Life? I mean, you assume the responsibilities of the executive editor. Tell us when you assume that responsibility and what has been your experience thus far.
Okay. I started in December of 2005. The first issue that had my name on it was the March 2006 issue. And I was hired at the time with a mandate to redesign the magazine. And the U.S. Chess Federation hired a consultant, Paul Hoffman, who had been a editor of Discover magazine and president of Encyclopedia Britannica. And he worked with me on this redesign that was introduced in June of 2006. There were painful changes that were made. A lot of people were upset with some of the columns we cut. But we did that with a very specific plan in mind of expanding our feature coverage. And now, a number of years later, we're 7 years later, that seems to have worked out in the long run. So I'm glad we made that change. We made additional changes. We did a second redesign introduced with the August 2012 issue, where we added full color. So it's now a full color magazine throughout, allowing us to do much more with photography and just exploring the human drama that is chess. And so we were able to do a feature in the September Chess Life that's on news available now on the World Chess Hall of Fame's Jonathan Krumiller's collection of chess sets. And it just looks so much better in full color in print than it would have if it had been still black and white. Going forward, the main task I'm working for this next year is making Chess Life available on both iPad and Android platforms. And we're still working out some of the details yet. We're not sure whether we will have a very dedicated app that's a branded Chess Life app, or if it will be something more generic. But we do want it to be available on people's mobile devices and tablets. In both of the key formats and also in Kindle format. So we're trying to stay current with the times and remain relevant, and I'm certainly motivated to do so when I visit a place like St. Louis, where they are setting the bar for chess so high. I would like to meet that bar for our magazine and our members as well.
Well, you're doing a wonderful job. I remember living in Atlanta and you being the editor of Georgia Chess magazine, which won a number of different awards. But I wanted to ask you a question about magazine publishing these days, because as you know, a lot of formats are becoming digitized, and I know you said you're moving the platform onto some digital, you know, the iPad and other media. Do you see that as a challenge? Have you experienced any problems with people's, I guess, taste moving toward the digital format?
You know, it for someone like me who grew up in print publishing, it's a little painful to see that move away from print. Magazines, I think, are a little bit more resilient towards the move to digitizing because people, I think, read them differently than they did newspapers, and that's why newspapers moved so quickly to the digital format. But people are, at this point, used to being able to have multiple platforms, and so they may want to read the same magazine in both print and digital format. And then there's going to be the people that are diehard print only and the people that are diehard digital only. And it's the only problem is we just have to make it available to everybody. Otherwise, you're going to lose a big segment. Now, the U.S. Chess Federation's magazine is in a different position than other magazines like a Sports Illustrated or a golf magazine, in that we're not based on an advertising model. We're based on a membership model. It's one of the key benefits of joining the U.S. Chess Federation is that you get a copy of Chess Life. So because we're not as beholden to advertising, that gives us a little bit more longevity, I think, and a little bit more freedom and flexibility.
Now, Chess Life is actually, we speak of it in terms of a national magazine, but it's certainly an international magazine. How far does just Chess Life span across the globe in terms of the types of readership that you have abroad?
Well, of course, you know, we have the armed forces as well. So a lot of it goes to a lot of armed forces addresses across the world. But on top of that, we have subscribers in Canada and Mexico, England, throughout the United Kingdom, in many of the other English-speaking countries as well. So we only are in the low thousands in how many we send overseas, but you know it's still a significant amount considering our total U.S. Chess Federation membership is 80,000.
Now, in terms of helping to popularize chess or chess readership, I know you're an avid tennis player, and tennis has been very successful in helping to popularize the sport. There are many other examples, including golf. Do you see any parallels between tennis and chess, and how some of those examples may be used to help popularize chess?
Well, I am an avid tennis player, and one of the things that I find interesting in my local league that I play in Atlanta, it's called ALTA, which stands for the Atlanta Lawn Tennis Association, even though that's a bit of an anachronism. Nobody's playing lawn tennis in Atlanta. We have the same membership in that organization in Atlanta, 80,000, that the U.S. Chess Federation as a whole has. So I've been wondering, what is it that they're doing right? And it's the social aspect that they focus on in that organization that perhaps is what is missing in the U.S. Chess Federation. People in ALTA are playing tennis for the fun of it. There's no cash prizes for them. And I've always been curious about the cash prize format in chess events, you know, especially considering that children are often eligible for those as well. I find that odd. And I think that if people are playing more for the fun of it, so via league play and such, where the prize is the honor of having won, and the fun is partly tied to helping your team win, like it is with ALTA, because ALTA matches are team matches, they're not individual matches.
Okay.
I could see that as a potential model for expanding team play around. And I think that Greg Shahadi's U.S. Chess League is an example of that. You know, they're playing for the glory, and it's proving very popular.
There are lots of developments besides the Chess League that you've mentioned. Scholastic play has just exploded. We've had more than 5,300 players at the Super Nationals. Do you see any positive trends coming out of Scholastic Chess that will continue to keep this growth and also to keep these Scholastic players active, because many of them drop out for some reason?
Right.
And I know you have a magazine, I believe, that's targeted at that market.
Right. Chess Life for Kids goes to our members that are ages 13 and under. And the positive, to answer your question about what the positives are just the huge numbers. I mean, Scholastic Chess is in the middle of a boom and a golden age right now. But the problem is, how do you maintain that interest once they enter college and they have, you know, all this whole other world opens up to them? Because the drop-off is very much, if you look at the numbers, it's like dropping off a cliff. Mm-hmm. And what happens is these people typically don't re-enter chess or rated chess until they're in their 30s and 40s, and families have started to stabilize. They're not dealing with young kids and such, and are looking for a new hobby, and they return to something from their childhood. Smarter people than I have looked at this issue, and perhaps the most encouraging trend is the growth of college chess teams. That maybe that will keep people involved in chess through college. Right now, it's only keeping Grandmaster and IM level players interested through college, but you know, it's still early, and so there's some hope there. But we're certainly open as an organization to people's ideas to how do you keep young people with the whole world out in front of them interested in a specific activity like chess.
Last question, and we're in St. Louis, Missouri, which is 20 years ago, it would have been an unlikely place in terms of viewing it as the kind of the mecca or the centrifugal force for the growth of chess. Tell us your experience so far in St. Louis and the works of Rex Sinkfield, and what you think this has done for U.S. chess.
Well, again, it has just set the bar very high. It just shows what is possible. Certainly, having a benefactor helps, but it's something that a strong community can probably support a chess center like this without a major benefactor, through membership fees and such, because there seems to be a little bit of build it and they will come going on here in St. Louis. Certainly, as soon as this facility opened here, the U.S. Chess Federation latched on with a vengeance, because it is so positive for American chess. I can't say enough kind things about what Rex Sinkfield has done for American chess. And again, I have a little bit of angst because of it, because he's made my job more difficult, because now I have almost too much to cover and not enough of magazine pages to be able to do it.
Exactly. Well, I appreciate your questions, and hopefully we'll see some exciting stories coming from the Sinkfield Cup in the newest Chess Life. Can you just tell us what's on the latest issue of Chess Life?
Well, sure. What's available right now online at uschess.org and on newsstands is our September issue, which has Jonathan Kremiller's collection from the World Chess Hall of Fame as our cover story. We also covered the National Open in an article by Al Lawrence, which is the huge Las Vegas Chess Festival event. And we just sent the October issue off to the printer. And in that issue, which will be available on October 1st online and in mailboxes, we have our cover story about Pal Benko's 85th birthday, which he celebrated this year. Pal Benko is our 45-year-long endgame columnist for the magazine. And you know, he discusses some interesting items in there. For example, the question about whether or not he accepted a payoff to give up his spot in the World Championship to Bobby Fischer. So I'll leave you with that teaser. And we also cover Daniel Naroditsky, who is our young grandmaster elect from California. And then in between those two features, sandwiched in is our World Open coverage. So lots of good things to look forward to in the October issue.
I'm looking forward to receiving my issue in the mail, and thanks for your questions, and we're looking for exciting things for Chess Life.
Thank you for talking to me, Daim.
Okay. This is Daim Shabazz of the Chess Room, and we're signing off.